Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales. Natalie has been in the top 1% in the country for over 25 years and number one in Hawaii for 2 years prior to stepping back to building Realty Universal. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And she joins us now. Hey, Natalie.
Hey there. How are you, Randy?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Is this Wednesday? It's hump day. It's hump day in the world.
It's what
Unless
day?
You're in... It's hump day. Wednesday is hump day. We're over the hump. We're over the hump. And... yeah. Hump
day. Oh, is that what that is? Okay. That's
Have you seen
cool.
that new Geico commercial where... there's this camel walking through an office, and he's like, "What day is it? What day is it? Come on, tell me. Hump day, hump day." You know, and his camel's all excited because camels have humps. But anyway, pretty funny commercial. But I'm glad it's
hump
day. Oh,
that's cool. So that's Wednesday. That's in the middle right there. You just made it. You're got it. Okay. Now you're
yeah,
going to come down off the hump. Dude. Oh, cool.
And then
how
we're in
cool.
the middle of the middle day because, of course, high noon in California. What, 9 a.m. in Hawaii and 3 p.m. in on the East
3
Coast.
3 p.m.
So.
In East Coast. And in parts of Europe, it's 9 o'clock. What time is it? 9 o'clock at night. And we could go all the way around. We've got in the Philippines, it's, oh, my gosh, time is tomorrow already. Just amazing.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, well, we interviewed amazing. A guy. I interviewed a guy the other day who was in New Zealand and I think it was 1 o'clock here. It was like 8 a.m. the next day there. And I'm like, so it's 8. It's tomorrow there already. So can you tell us what's going to happen? Like, are you ahead
yeah,
of
really.
Term?
Can we go back and see what happened yesterday? We're going into the future here. That's cool.
Kind of weird.
Cool. I know. It
yeah,
is kind of
so.
Weird when you think about it. When you put it in perspective, it's like, okay, it's just it doesn't really matter, does it? It's like it's so cool
yeah.
about stepping into it. And,
yeah.
Now, so when we can do like they do on Star Trek and beam them up, Scotty, right? Beam me up. That'll be pretty cool, too.
I can't wait. And
travel
the cool car from
so
Back to the cool car from Back to the Future. That'll be fun. You know, that you get
uh-huh.
to drive, that you fly around and stuff. So hopefully that'll happen. Hey, today we've got a big show. Of course, we're going to talk about eminent domain in the first half as regards short sales and how much of the government should not be involved. I'm excited about that. That's coming up in just a moment. And on the other side today, the one and only Tim Davis, he is he's a branding expert. He does, I thought you'd be interested in this. He does branding you know, kind of motivational seminars for real estate agents and brokers and for mortgage companies. So,
oh, wow. I definitely want to talk to him. Absolutely.
Yeah. So he's going to be in the second half, and that'll be
cool.
fun. We'll get inspired. And I know a lot of real estate agents, brokers, and folks in the industry listen to the show. And so, and even if you're not, of course, Tim is very, very motivating. I call him the branding man because he really is good at helping people brand, you know, position their brand and elevate their brand. And he does these branding mastery workshops all over the country, and he's just a lot of fun.
Wow.
On Facebook, he posts his weird socks and weird clothes he wears, and he's kind of a crazy guy in Nashville, Tennessee. So that'll be fun in the
second
half.
Oh, I can't wait. That'll be exciting. Exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to get him back, too. For so many agents listen to the archives, too, and then on other trainings we could maybe get involved
yep.
there. That'd be awesome. Well,
yeah.
Today we are talking about eminent domain and should it happen or not happen. We're actually citing a situation that's going on right now and here we are in August of 2013. I like to say that sometimes because these controversial issues that come up, it's always nice to know for the future listeners, when was that, you know? And what eminent domain is, for those of you out there that aren't familiar with it, it's the government has the power to take private property for public use. So typically it's a state that's going to do it. It can be your local municipalities.
Oh, yeah.
That's cute. That's like, what am, my tongues are tied. My tongue's tied.
So
government subdivisions and corporations are authorized to exercise the and do this. But typically in the past, you've seen where when the government comes in and does it, they're supposed to take it for market value. Many, many times you see that it's taken for less than market value. So, you know, you have a person that possibly has lived or a property's been in a family for 100 years and now a highway's going through and they want to take that property. They need to access. They need to knock down the property and use that for to be able to put the highway in. So the government can actually say, we can come and, you know, take your property. Doesn't really seem fair, does it? But they should have to pay a really, really good amount to be able to do that. So it can also be taken for reasons of public safety. You know, there's been many situations that have happened over the years. So some jurisdictions can offer to purchase it before using. They also have the right to purchase it before using the power of eminent domain. So why are we doing it today on the show and talking about it? Should it be allowed or should it not be allowed? And a lot of times it becomes the perspective of who's involved, you know, who is this happening to. Right now, California City, I don't know if you heard this yet in the news or not, Randy, but Richmond, California has a situation right now where there's a lot of foreclosures in the area, and they have already sent out letters to over 600 mortgage companies stating that they may they'd like to purchase the loans. They may enforce eminent domain if this is not agreed upon. So that's, I mean, that borders on, is it legal or is it not legal, right? Because the mortgage companies, you know, that's a different situation. It's not that they're purchasing it to do something else, you know, something else that's going to be done for the city. So it's a real controversial issue. It's in the LA Times. We also got information from newsgenie.us. So basically, they're threatening to do this, but can they do it or can they not do it? It looks like Freddie Mac's already threatening lawsuits if they try to do this. And what they're doing, basically, it says as a first step, the San Francisco-based city said it will work with an investment firm to try to purchase the mortgages of underwater homeowners at a price well below their current balances. Then it'll try to get these loans restructured to make them affordable. So, you know, when you hear that, you think, well, if it's going to help all the homeowners, of course homeowners are going to want it. Maybe, right? Or you would think on the forefront, yeah, they can save their home and they're going to work for them.
Absolutely.
They may want it, right? So we're going to go through some of that right now today. And please feel free to call in if you're listening. We really want your input, your questions, your comments at 347-945-5428. Email is radio@realtyuniversal.com. That's radio@realtyuniversal.com. And lots of times, you know, the opinion is on which side of the fence you're sitting on, right? How does this affect you?
Yep.
You know, so the city actually was contacted by an investment firm that proposed this, and they do stand to make a profit if this happens. It's very controversial, though, because can you really, I mean, do they really have the right to do this? And so we're going to go through some of the steps. I think, personally, when we're getting the government involved in so many issues and you're giving that power away, in the long run, it's not really a good thing. I think you can really hurt yourself. And if they go in and try to do something like this, what's the guarantee that they're going to be able to do it, also legally, because there could be lawsuits for years, So if you're in a property right now and you're trying to save your mortgage, how is that going to affect you personally? There's just a lot of areas to look at when we're discussing this. And, you know, what's your opinion on the eminent domain, Randy? Do you think that the purpose is actually not for saving mortgages, not for stopping properties from foreclosure? The purpose actually is to, used because the government needs your land, basically. That's what it was pretty much started for.
Oh, okay. So that's the purpose isn't helping the homeowner. It's they want the land, and it becomes an asset to the government. It becomes a revenue at some point, somehow, becomes an income stream for the government. Because that's my question, as you were describing it, is, you know, why would they get involved at all? I mean, they've got all these other, you know, agencies. I mean, like you said, like Fannie Mae and others that, you know, that work with homeowners that, you know, they are, I mean, quasi-government agencies, I guess. And it just sounds, again, to me, you know, and this might kind of tip off my political bent, but it just feels like government getting bigger and bigger. Is what it feels like to me.
I agree.
It feels like, you know, they're just taking over assets. They're taking over literally everything. And I don't know what the alternative is. I mean, if those homes just sit, they're not doing anybody any good, right? I mean, what's the alternative, I guess?
Well, you know, it depends on individually. Now, I think as a negotiating leverage tool, it may be a great thing saying, hey, come on, guys, let's all work this out. And if we can't work it out, we're going to enforce other rights that we have. Although I'm not an attorney, technically I think there could be lawsuits on this for quite some time if the mortgage company said forget it. I did read in here it said that they're proposing to the mortgage companies that they'll buy the mortgages at 80% of the market value. Now, if they really would be giving 80%, this is before stepping in to actually do eminent domain, if they really will give the mortgage companies 80%, the mortgage companies may consider that. They have been trying to get more towards market value now, and of course they're going to have to crunch their numbers and see. And I read that they sent over 600 letters, but I don't know how many different mortgage companies are involved, et cetera. You know, so I guess all of that's going to make a difference as to, you know, if this is a good negotiating tool. It said the plan was proposed, this Richmond plan was proposed by a private backer, Mortgage Resolution Partners, which will have to find the money the city needs to buy the mortgages. It does stand to profit by taking a cut when the loans are refinanced. I don't agree that the government should be able to step in and just take it over fully. I think it's great if they're going to step in and try to work out a plan, but it's too much control seems to be getting in here. And then if they're, you know, it can also tie people up for quite a long time too, right? So,
yeah.
And the current mortgage holders, I mean, why do they have to, you know, in fairness to them, why do they have to just agree to take so much less without being able to mitigate it themselves, you know, and go through putting the properties on the market or go through short sales or if they had to do REOs, which are much not to the benefit of the homeowner because then the property is already foreclosed on. But why do they have to just succumb to this? You know, I think that's another issue too. It really brings to the forefront about eminent domain, though, and is it fair, is it not fair, you know, In the stance of when we get down to our land, you know, in the United States, we the American dream is to be able to buy and own your own property, and with eminent domain, they're saying, hey, we can come one day and say, you know, this is what we're offering you. You take it or leave it, you know. So that's not a good thing. That's why I wanted to actually do the show today on eminent domain and what people think about it. And just what you mentioned, too, like the government's getting bigger. Lots of times something seems really good to get you out of a pickle now, but it's really important to look at the big picture to see if it's really going to benefit and work, you know. I do say my hat's off to them for coming up with a thought of doing this. I don't know, you know, to say, hey, what can we, let's use it as a negotiating tool. You know, they always want to pull out anything, all the stops, and try to make it work. And the good thing that we have here, though, is it's, you know, the lenders, they don't want to take the houses back if they can help it, unless it's in a market where I've seen some of the lenders starting to rent properties out, you know, if they find that the market's, they think it's really going to come back up. But most of them, they're not in the business of owning homes, you know. So it's interesting. It's interesting to see. And as far as the law works, when people, when the attorneys go in and they study the case law and they bring in the codes and, you know, the laws, history makes the laws, right? So you have to go in when one thing changes and it's going to set precedent. So this is a very interesting case, an interesting situation that's happening in Richmond, California right now. And I would have never, you know, I can see where Freddie Mac is filing lawsuits, and they're, I mean, Freddie Mac's huge, so they have a pretty, you know, they have a pretty good upper arm, you know.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
That's
you know,
just amazing to me. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just kind of, it's
Is it not happening anywhere else? My question is it not happening at this point anywhere else? This is kind of a test case?
I haven't heard of it happening anywhere else, but I'm sure now that it's out in the news, it probably will. You know, there's lots of times there's so many things that they do to try to stop foreclosures or hold up foreclosures. A lot of state laws have been passed to hold up foreclosures, especially for homeowners that are living in the property. There's also, you know, laws that have been passed for tenants in properties so they don't get kicked out right away. So you have some of those things. But as far as this eminent domain, no, I'd have to do more research. I'm assuming maybe it has been done somewhere, but this is the first I'm hearing of it. They're trying to offer temporary benefits to underwater borrowers in specific markets. So this company, Mortgage Resolution Partners, maybe is just testing the waters everywhere else too, getting people to do this. It says it may offer, but it doesn't say it's there. Let me say there will be longer term harm, though, as lenders are likely to pull out of those markets and mortgage financing costs across the board are likely to rise. This is what Janet Seberg, a banking analyst, stated at Guggenheim. Partners. So, you know, when things are being shaken up like this, nothing just settles, right? There's always going to be something that's going to come out of it. And that's why it's so important for everybody to look at the big picture. I mean, I think right now many, many companies are looking at what happened with the loan crisis in 2008. And where that started back from the 90s, it didn't happen in 2008, and boom, here it happened. It started back in the 90s when they were loosening up restrictions on loans. So you can always look at the big picture. I think it's a pretty interesting concept, though, that they would try to use eminent domain. The thing that I don't like about it on the forefront is the government's involvement and the government taking over, and you know, more of the properties and having the say in what would happen. So it's pretty, pretty neat. Here's a homeowner that was quoted in newsgenie.us, Morris Legrand, saying that the city's already paying a big price for severely underwater mortgages. Borrowers paying off bloated loans have less money to spend at businesses in town. So the homeowner sees how, you know, it's affecting the economy locally because people don't have the extra money to spend. And the homes lost to foreclosures can blight entire neighborhoods, lowering property values for every homeowner and contribute to crime. So from a homeowner's perspective, and also I can see from the city, that this homeowner, Morris Legrand, says, we want the city to purchase the loans at fair market value so we can manage our lives more effectively and economically. So, you know, there you have it. Here's a homeowner saying, hey, you know, yeah, we are for it. And you heard him say at fair market value, right? So,
yeah, so that at least, you know, we're kind of starting at ground zero again. But again, you know, you hear reports in certain places, and we mentioned where I live in Chico, California, smaller town, Northern California, but, you know, there's a lack of inventory, so people are getting, you know, getting what they're asking for and more. But I guess my question is generally across the board, are homes still sounds like the being underwater problem is still pretty prevalent.
You know, that's a great question because we deal with, of course, Maryland and Hawaii, but then we deal with the brokers in all 50 states, you know, staying, having a pulse on what's going on. And it really is a case-by-case situation because it just depends on how underwater people are. I mean, if people maxed out and did those 125% loans, right, they can go in right now. The market may not have come up in their area enough to cover, you know, more than the market, 125%. So it's to their benefit to using these different government-sponsored loans, making Obama making homes affordable loans. There's different, you know, packages and different programs out there. If your property is under $700,000, your loan is under $700,000. So it's definitely worth it if you're listening to this right now to get on the phone and call your lender, because just because you called a year ago doesn't mean that there aren't new programs that you can take advantage of now. But your question's really great, Randy, and it's so funny because you see the news and they go, ah, it's picking up, it's doing this, it's doing that. Now in Hawaii is like Oahu has done great, and prices have even, you know, gone up. There's still pockets that some things have gone down. On the Big Island, you know, depending on if you're on the Hilo or Kona side, that varies. So it really makes a difference where you are. But overall, yeah, there's been an improvement overall in many markets, not Detroit. I mean, you know, in many markets, in the confidence and people saying, hey, I can get back on my feet, I'm learning how to do this. I think the biggest thing is people mentally saying, I've got to take charge, instead of, you know, burying their heads under the sand and just ignoring the problem. Because there's been so many foreclosures, so many short sales since 2008, so many people are talking about it, so many people are going through it. So the stigma is getting erased more. So, you know, where before someone would have been embarrassed to say they filed bankruptcy or they had a foreclosure or they had a short sale, now it's becoming so commonplace because it was such a massive problem that people feel more about, okay, I can take charge, let me handle this, you know. And I think that's the biggest key in what we need to be doing to move forward. And then the programs are offering different loans to help to help people. I have a problem lots of times with how some of the laws get changed and aren't looking at the big picture in time, and so we start to clear out the mess, and it starts to work, and then some law gets changed and it stops everything, and you know, and oh my God, why didn't you just wait another year? What are you guys doing? You know, so we're seeing all of that, and so I think right now with eminent domain, if it's a leverage, if it's a tool to leverage, but more to negotiate, that nobody really wants to go there, and everybody says, we really don't want to do it this way, but we will if we have to, they basically do have the right to take the control, and then they may not have the right to get it all the way through, but it's another plug. You know how lots of times the attorneys with court cases, they're trying to drag it on so somebody settles? You know, they, you know, people file and they know, oh, they're never going to really take it through to court because by the time they pay all these costs, it's going to be cheaper to settle. Well, that's kind of, to me, what I see as a layperson. I've been in real estate for years, but looking at eminent domain, it's just another negotiating tool. And hopefully between all the lenders that are involved, and of course they know, the city probably knows exactly how many loans are in default right there, how many lenders are involved. If they sent out over 600 letters, I'm getting that from the article I read, so I can't quote it. I mean, verbatim, I mean, and I haven't proven it, but they know exactly who's involved. So I guess right now somebody just needs to come in. They need a consultant to say, hey, let's figure this out, let's get do this, and let's negotiate. You know, are the lenders going to take 80% on the dollar? What they even said in this article, if they do take 80%, somebody has to go out and find the money, you know? So, I think in this situation, my hats go off literally to Richmond, California's government, local government, in stepping in and saying, hey, the mayor, Gail McLaughlin, mayor of Richmond, you know, my hat's off for them to step in and go, we got to do something. Because they're looking at it as, just like the homeowner said, okay, we're going to have more, you know, the values are going to go down if they have more foreclosures. There's going to be more crime. There's going to be abandoned homes. You know, people can't spend money in the city. So we have an emergency going on right now. So my hat's off to them for saying, what can we do? And let's figure out a way. You know, I'd rather figure out the way in, let's help the homeowner work out the mortgages, but not have to do it in a way that somebody here is going to really make huge profits from it. Do you see what I mean? Like, you just want to do it as a win-win and leverage. So I'm impressed, actually, to be honest, from my opinion. But do I think it's going to be more of a negotiating tool. I don't think that can they really go in and snap all that up over the years? I don't know. They have a couple different ways to do it, you know. So it's interesting.
Now,
I
did have a question on the eminent domain. When you're talking about the government coming in, you're talking about city governments taking over the properties, right? Or is it the federal government?
No. It's usually city and state.
It's usually
from what I've noticed. I don't know. I mean, of course, I'm not an attorney, and I don't know if there's any jurisdictional rules in the federal, because federal pretty much can cover just about everything, right? But I believe with eminent domain, they defer it to the state, to the local government. So typically it's a power that is given to the state. It can be delegated to individual. The state has the right to delegate it to their individual municipalities, as I couldn't say earlier, and government subdivisions or private. You know me, I'm just talking too fast. My brain always goes ahead of my mouth. One day, Randy, I'm going to learn. But anyhow, it can be done, you know. I think because the news is out here right now, too, that enough. There was one comment in here that they felt like the, you know, mortgage lenders are going to not want to be involved if they know cities can do this. And I don't think that's going to happen, because news travels fast, and they're going to have to figure out a way to say, okay, guys, we got to all work together. It is sad, though, when you think about the mortgage companies, which people say, oh, I don't care about the mortgage companies. Well, I do, because the people, when they were lending money and people signed to agree, you can't blame it all on the mortgage companies. You know what I mean? A lot of people got in under their hat, you know, way over their heads. And took out extra monies and had a field day and figured, you know, so it's everybody's to blame. So I think everybody needs to work through it right now. Yeah.
Plenty of blame to go around.
Plenty
of blame to go around in that scenario. Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's it for eminent domain. We're almost finished the first half of our show. And it's just you can call in or email questions if you have any questions as well.
Absolutely. Again, 347-945-5428, and you can email radio.
Oh, we have a caller on the line. I think we do have. Okay. Yes. Okay. Yeah, we're getting ready
Tim's on the line, and we'll get with him here in a minute.
Two callers. We'll get on. I think we have another caller too calling in. So we're almost over. So we can, you know, still if you have questions, comments, because we'll still air it. We'd like to your feedback. Please let us know what you think, because it's just an interesting thing to pull out of the bag, you know, to stop a problem like this.
Yeah.
And,
All right. And then again, email, if you're listening archived, of course, radio@realtyuniversal.com. You can email questions as well, and we'll answer them. We'll answer them next week. Absolutely, we'll do that. So let's do this. Yeah, let's take a break, and we'll come back on the other side. Tim Davis, a.k.a. the marketing branding evangelist, is going to be with us, and this is going to be good stuff. You're going to be fired up. We're going to learn a lot. So stay tuned. Realty Universal Radio, live, on the air, everywhere. We'll be right back.
Real estate is still a solid investment to invest in if you are in for the long haul. It can also be one of the best investments of your capital if handled correctly. In the United States, we are fortunate to have the tax write-offs that we take for granted while owning property. To obtain the best value for your real estate, there needs to be a market of both buyers and sellers, as well as a means of bringing the two together. Now more than ever, due to the recent loan crisis, even with bringing buyers and sellers together, there needs to be a way to make the financing work if a loan is needed. There are still many options available, and we can help. Whether you're a buyer, seller, going through a short sale, investing at the top or bottom, we have trained Realty Universal members in each state and affiliates who can customize your process the way it will work best for you. We do advise that you coordinate with your accountant and real estate attorney so your plan is intact. We have all learned through this economy that planning and averting pitfalls can make a world of difference in our futures. Ultimately, you have to rely on you. After consulting with the experts, we set you up to win.
Yeah, buddy, Realty Universal Radio on the air everywhere, worldwide. Of course, we're live right now. You may be listening archived, and you can respond radio@realtyuniversal.com. And Tim Davis is going to join us in just a couple of minutes, and it's going to be good stuff. He's a marketing consultant, branding expert to the real estate community, a.k.a. the marketing evangelist. But before we get to Tim, let's go to the phones. I believe Joe is there. Hey, Joe.
Hey. All right, here's my input on this. It seems to me like the hostess is pretty enthused about having the government come in as a potential solution. You don't want the government coming in any more than already has. The government primarily was the reason for the financial crisis back in 2007 and 2008. And eminent domain is absolutely not the answer.
I agree. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Then that's it. That's all.
No, I agree with you. I was just going through what we're, you know, I agree. I thought it was a cool thing to pull out to stop this, but I don't think it's the answer. So go ahead, please.
It's not the answer. I mean, you've already agreed with me. So there really isn't anything else to expound on, except I'm hoping that you guys realize that the government was the problem, is the problem, and if they use eminent domain, I don't know how it went from the constitutional power to the federal government to have it trickle down to the city of Elmont and Richmond. To me, I don't particularly care for it. It means the government can step in anytime they want. Usually, yeah, it'll be influenced by lobbyists, and the poor people will be just, you know, shuttled aside.
Yeah.
So, and also, I don't know if you know this, but the city asked the 620 homeowners to sell their homes at a discount. They refused. And then they
Did that first, huh? No, I didn't know that. This is just, we're just getting the news on other part of it so far. Oh, so they asked ahead and they refused, and now they're taking it the next step.
Right.
That's not good.
So it wasn't really a suggestion.
That's not good.
Well, that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted to say. So I'll let you get back.
No, Joe, I'm so glad you did, because really, Randy and I were talking before. My feeling is definitely not that the government should get involved. I thought that it looked like, because then we have bigger problems, and I don't think they could get through with this all the way to the end because of the lawsuits and the fact of what the jurisdiction is for it. But what I thought was interesting is if they use it as a leverage tool to be able to say, okay, we don't want to do this, but everybody has to work together now, but not to just put a bunch of money in a private investor's pocket, that's coming into the government's pocket. You know, it has to be a win-win situation.
Yeah,
so,
right. And if the government's involved, it's not going to be a win-win.
No.
All
thanks,
right.
Joe.
No,
sure. All right, take it easy.
Thank you.
All right, man.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye. All righty, so
thank
on the line, Tim Davis. And he's a little bit of a disclosure here. He's a good friend of mine from Nashville, Tennessee, marketing consultant, branding expert to the real estate community, works with agents who want to create an expert brand in their local community, increase their business through referrals. He's known as the marketing evangelist, and he's with us now from Nashville. What's up, buddy?
Hey, what's going on today? I was listening in on your call eminent domain and scary stuff out there, but been in this industry now 20 years, so I've seen quite a few things come, and I wish I could say I'm surprised, but anymore I don't get surprised by anything that happens in real estate.
No, that's a good point. No, it's
always something new. Now you've been in the real estate mortgage industry for, you say, 20 years?
Yeah, 20 years. I got talked into it just out of college.
Wow.
And it sounded like a good idea at the time, and it just stuck. So.
Well, you don't seem that old, man. But I've seen you on Facebook. Right. You don't look that old.
Photoshop is an incredible tool. Everybody should invest in it.
It's an amazing thing. So we have a lot of brokers, agents on the call and listen archived, and of course the archive listens just continue to grow. Many of them brokers and agents. So this will be perfect because there are them out there who are maybe in an office, work for a company, and are struggling with the whole branding and marketing deals. So why don't we just kind of dig in, man? Because the time is going to fly with you. I know it. Let's start with branding and What when you say branding, what do you mean? What are you saying exactly?
Branding is really just simply, my definition of it is, what is the consumer's perception of you? And what do you want it to be? And that ultimately comprises what I call your brand. It's really you taking control and putting out the image and the perception that you want people to think of when they think of you. So do they think of a certain type of property or certain communities? Do they think of a certain type of level of service? Do they think of a certain type of speed when it comes to what you do in the real estate market? So it's really just taking all your resources and putting them into play so that when the consumer hears your name, hears about you, they immediately think of that one thing that you stand for, and they're drawn to that as a result. So that's a simple definition, yeah. But that ultimately is what it comes out to be. And let me say this, Randy. At the end of the day, being in this business for 20 years, a couple things that I've noticed. Number one, mortgage professionals and real estate professionals change companies quite frequently. And so they'll move from one organization to another organization. And that's been my experience. I've watched it happen a number of times. And that's why I'm such a big believer in building your personal brand as opposed to the company brand. Because in all my years of when I originated mortgage loans and people would call me up and we would talk about their finance, and they never once said to me, hey, Tim, I want my loan to be payable to XYZ company. They always called as a result of the brand that I built, because people do business with people. They don't do business with companies.
Yeah.
Right. Companies provide the services, they provide the products, they provide the infrastructure in a lot of cases. But ultimately, at the end of the day, this is a relationship business. It's a one-on-one, belly-to-belly, hey, I've got the biggest investment of my lifetime, and I want somebody that I know I can trust to be able to take care of this transaction and walk me from point A to point B to point C throughout the entire process. So they do business with people, so I'm a big believer in building your personal brand.
Wow. You know, and when you say, you know, again, develop your brand, and you rattled off, you know, do you want people to think of you as this or that or the other? Obviously, and Natalie can, I know, speak to this, because that's been a big part of her success over the years in real estate is service, obviously. It is, I think, for a real estate agent, you know, a big deal. And that happens, Natalie, with, as both of you have said, really being there for people, loving people, building relationship, doing it for the right reasons, all of that, I think it comes back. Right, Natalie? I mean, that's been your experience.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. And we've pushed real estate menu systems for so long that a lot of people that know us and work with us know that they're going to be able to, that we're part of real estate menu systems where they have choices. And, yeah, people come back to you for you. They're not going to hire you just because of who you work with. I'm seeing now, because the Internet's so involved and we love to leverage our time and be able to do so many more things virtually than just the one-on-one, even though you still need one-on-one connection via phone, via email. It's even more important because so many people are making their decisions based on how they feel about your brand or whomever. We've been blessed from being in the business so long that we have such repeat business and referrals that 80% of our business comes from that. And I agree totally. I agree, Tim, with what Tim's saying. They're coming to you. They're not really coming to the other people, you know. But it's good to see what your end result's going to be, because there's a way to brand yourself now and not have to just geographically stay in one spot as in the old days everybody had to. So, yeah, I think it's great.
Be an expert in one town.
It's tough, though, Tim, isn't it? Because, unfortunately, you're doing the trainings with real estate and brokers, agents, and mortgage people, I'm hearing, right? And it's a type of industry that's kind of tough, because people, they want to know your numbers. Or in the real estate business, they want to know if you're successful, how much you've done. And it's kind of tough, because people assume things, and that's not always the case, right? You know, so and different people get, some people get turned off by one thing or another. So it's hard. You have to brand, but you got to still be yourself too, right? So that you're not.
that's the biggest thing that I tell people. I mean, you know, in this industry, and I've been guilty of this plenty of times, of thinking I'm going to go out and dominate every loan that was, you know, going to be done in Nashville, Tennessee, which is the craziest thought ever when you say it out loud. But inside your mind, it's like real. It's like, oh, I can do that. But when it comes out of your mouth, you're like, man, you're an idiot for saying that. So here's at the end of the day, I got a saying that I'll say at my seminars. I'm not looking for anybody. I'm looking for somebody. And here's what I mean by that. Your brand is comprised of who you are and your story. Let's take mine, for example, the marketing evangelist. That's going to turn off some people.
Yeah.
They're going to go, oh, that's just this or that.
Jesus,
or they're going to have assumptions behind it or whatever, and they're not going to like it. But the people who do fall madly in love with that brand.
Right, exactly.
And that's who I'm looking for, because I realized when I tried to serve everybody and please everybody, I ended up with a bunch of customers that I was trying to juggle and trying to be a chameleon to this one and a chameleon to that one and serve their needs and serve their needs. And I went to a seminar one time, and they said, build your business around your life and what you love to do. And I thought, man, how do you do that? How do you do that? And it really just starts with being you.
Exactly.
So, you know, a great example of that, there's a gentleman here in Nashville, Grant Hammond, and he is the downtown condominium king. And that's what he
What's
owns.
His name? Grant Hammond.
Owns.
Okay, good. Yeah.
And so I'm not a condo buyer, right? I like my yard and my house and,
right,
you know, those kind of things. So I'm not really his target consumer. But the people that are fall madly in love with him because he knows everything there is to know about that demographic and who lives there and where they're at and where the best place to buy is and the numbers and all that kind of stuff. So he really got that concept of, I'm not trying to serve everybody, I'm trying to serve somebody.
Mm. I love that. It speaks to the tribe thing. Who's your tribe? You know, who are you? Who's your tribe? You know, your tribe isn't everybody. It's, you know, it's people who are like-minded and who you would respond to you, who you're frankly meant here to serve, right? And it isn't everybody, but you're right. I think all of us, especially in sales, any kind of sales, we want to dominate the world. We want to be the best. The competitive thing is a big part of it, you know. And, you know, you think, okay, I want to just, yeah, I want it all. But it's really, you know, boy, when you begin to find out who your tribe is and be comfortable with that, your tribe will love you and it'll grow. And you don't have to worry about being a chameleon to other people. I love that.
Well, part of it's the likability factor, right? I mean, you know, people have to know you first, right? And so they have to become aware of you, whether they become aware of you through an ad, a print media, a blog talk radio show, a social media, or even a networking or chamber event. Somehow they're going to get to know you. And then they got to like you. And here's the reality. Not everybody's going to like you. So when I realize that, I'm like, oh, man, that hurts.
Does it really hurt? I don't think it doesn't matter, I guess, after, you know, I'm just kidding.
After a certain age, it's like, the heck with you, right?
But, yeah.
But when you're trying to get started, it hurts. It's like, I can't believe these people don't like me. What's wrong with them? And then, but that likability is really part of the brand. So if you really spend time and you flesh out that brand to be who you naturally are, and what you naturally like, and that shows through to people, the people who have the same interests and have the same likes and have the same opinion and have the same beliefs, they're going to go, wow, you know, you're much more than my real estate agent. You're my friend.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where real business starts to blossom, when you can create real, substantial, lifelong relationships. Mm-hmm. And to me, it starts there with the brand, and if we can ever get a handle around that and really just own who we are and who we serve and communicate that in an effective way, and we can come up with something pretty powerful and really eliminate a lot of the stress that sometimes comes along with finding clients.
I found that even when you kind of back up a little bit, you reinforce things even for people who are kind of veterans. And so let's kind of back up and go, okay, just for fun, I'm a new agent, and I love what you're saying, but I have no idea how to develop my brand. What are some of my first steps in developing my brand?
Well, you just take a bunch of guesses until you get it right. Just kidding. Now, here's one of the best ways. Sometimes I get a little glib. It's part of my personality. One of the best ways to really kind of flesh out your brand is to do two things. Number one, just write out your personal story. What makes you you? And number two, take an inventory of people that you admire. And they don't necessarily, here's a really interesting part, they don't necessarily have to be in real estate. They could be in other industries. They could be authors or trainers or speakers. But take an inventory of people that you admire within your industry and with outside your industry and really take a look at that and ask yourself, what is it that I admire about them? And why do I think that I admire that? And how could I model own uniqueness? And I learned this from my wife, because she would go get her hair fixed, and every time she would go, she would take a magazine of all these people with different hairstyles. And she would go, I'm like, why are you taking a magazine? She's like, well, so I can show Wendy the different hairstyles, and we can select one that I like. And then she can model that on me.
Good
and
idea,
I thought, man,
yeah,
that's a great concept. Why don't we use that in business? All I'm going to do is I'm going to go find people that I admire and take a look at their brand, everything from their image to their messaging to how they kind of pull everything together. And I'm just going to kind of make this vision board of other people's brands and take my story and go, well, how can I use my story and some of those, and how can I recreate some of the things that they've done to push my brand and my image out there in a whole new way? So that's what I tell people to start. They'll start with your story and the list of people that you admire, and let's start investigating what is it about them that you admire.
Yeah, and you, while we're there, I mean, I would love for just a moment, because your story is pretty inspirational, and part of this half-hour segment that we do here is to inspire and you know, motivate folks. And why don't you kind of give us a quick summation of your story and how you ended up doing what you're doing. This is pretty inspiring.
You know, I'm a kid from the wrong side of the tracks. You know, most people today in today's culture would go, yeah, you're an at-risk child. You grew up in a single-parent household on government assistance and welfare in the middle of the projects. You don't really have much of a chance, and if you do, you're probably going to end up in jail or, you know, worse yet, you know, dead. And so that's that's really kind of where my story starts, you know, just a kid from the wrong side of the tracks of the projects who didn't want my whole life to turn out that way. I just looked around and I thought, man, you know, my friends that I go to school with, they don't wonder where their next meal's coming from. They're not worried about, can they make one pair of tennis shoes last 2 or 3 years, even though they're going to get too small and you're growing a young man. They don't have these worries in life, but why? Why is it that their lot in life is different than my lot in life? And so I decided, rather than take the approach of, well, this is just the cards that I've been dealt, and I'm just going to have to deal with it and suffer through it, and that's all there is to it. I heard somebody say one time, you could be anything you wanted to, just put your mind to it. And rather than dismiss that as another glib quote, I thought, you know, I'm going to take that seriously and figure out really what that means. It probably is why I get so heavy into branding and relationship building and building of influence, because ultimately how I move from the projects and the welfare system into college and on into owning my own business and then, you know, doing what I do now, which if anybody can figure that out, they can call me and say, hey, this is exactly what you do. Was really just an exercise in modeling behavior and asking good questions. So I started by saying, well, you know, people that don't live in the projects, what do they do? How come they don't, you know, have the poverty that we do? And so I just started to be an observer of people and a builder of relationships. So I would observe behavior and say, well, this is how they behave, and this is the results that they get. And logically, in my mind, I felt like, well, if I behave the same way, right, if I act right and I have good manners and I'm respectful and I'm polite to people and I tell the truth and I work on my character, then surely I should get similar results. So I started there. And then I realized that so much of life is a product of who you know. And relationships mean so much more than anything else. And how do you build good relationships? Well, you become a servant first, and you look for ways to serve others, and you look for ways to add value to their life and benefit them in some way, and you bring whatever you can to the table. I mean, we've all been to a, you know, a potluck dinner, right? And everybody brings something. Well, you bring what you have. So if the best you've got is a can of pinto beans, bring those pinto beans. Don't worry and try to compare yourself against somebody that brought, you know, spare ribs. Bring what you can and start there. And so that's really, in a nutshell, the story of I think anybody can do it. It's not a complicated story. I didn't have Twitter and Facebook back then.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of desire. A little bit of desire mixed with some great modeling behavior.
Yeah.
You know, mixed with a little bit of willingness to take a risk here and there, mixed with a whole lot of developing great relationships with people that, you know, are quality people. I mean, don't develop relationships with people that have got their ox in a ditch, because they're going to, you know, get you down in there with it.
Yep.
So you got to go after quality people, and you got to find a way to add value to their lives. And everybody has two things they want in life, and I think this will really help out all your listeners. If this is kind of a central philosophy to my whole marketing message, everybody's looking for two things. And number one, they look for a chance to be heard. Not a chance to be right, but a chance to be heard. Just, did you hear me? Did you take time to listen to what I had to say? And the second thing is, everybody's looking for a chance to know that they're valuable in some way. So any of us can do that, right? Any of us can sit down with somebody and say, hey, tell me your story. Let me listen to what's going on in your life. And I'm just going to listen. And when we do that, we fulfill a basic fundamental need that people look for their whole life. And then if we find ways to show them in tangible ways that they're valuable, I mean, put those two combinations together, that will take you places that, you know, a Facebook ad can never get you.
Wow. Yeah. That's so practical and so true. In fact, as you asked that or mentioned that, I earlier you mentioned you didn't have Facebook or Twitter, and you actually kind of answered my question already. But in this age, you know, of Facebook and Twitter and social media, branding, you've got to be on top of that. You've got to be on top of that stuff, right? But I mean, it's still relationships, and it's still, especially, I think, in the, you know, Natalie, you can correct me, but I mean, I still think in the real estate and, you know, industry, I mean, it's still, like you say, face-to-face relationship stuff. And so it's a combination of both of those. You know, I think some people may try and rely on one too much or the other. And I think maybe the temptation in this day and age, because people are so disconnected, maybe new agents, and I don't know if you guys see this, but tend to lean more on the social media and online marketing as opposed to face-to-face. Do you find that you have to kind of nudge people back into the connecting with people thing?
To me, let's take Facebook, for example. Facebook is like the digital yellow pages. And if I'm going to get on there, I'm going to make a meaningful relationship, or I'm not going to have one at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's what I mean by that. If I connect with, say I connect with you, Randy, on Facebook, and I send you a friend request, and maybe I'm a distant connection, I learned about you through somebody else, I'm going to send a message with that. Hey, I learned about you through Joe, who's really good friends, and he said we should connect. How about we set up a time to have a conversation so I can learn more about you and maybe a way I can add value to you down the road? And I will tell you, out of the 4,000-plus friends I've got on Facebook that, you know, friend me and stuff, I've done that with like 90% of them.
Mm.
So even though it's a digital platform, I still take it to a personal level, because you just can't replace a human voice or a human touch.
Mm.
Right.
Well, and that, you know, and that explains a lot, because you get a lot of response on your Facebook page, and it's because you've personally connected with most of those folks.
I've connected with them offline. I've got a saying, I'm like, take the online offline. I'm good with online.
Ooh, that's good.
But take the online offline. How can you take that to the next level and build a meaningful relationship, or are you just interested in having your numbers go up every day?
Because
until Regions Bank allows me to bring a snapshot of my friends list and deposit it, I'm going to have to find a way to make relationships.
Yeah, exactly. I think people get caught up somewhat in the ego of the Facebook numbers or whatever, Twitter followers, and there's that kind of thing, and they get all caught up in that. But you're right. That doesn't – you can't take that to the bank, man. Tim Davis is with us, and again, marketing consultant and branding expert, the marketing evangelist. And Tim, what's the best way for folks – we've got about 2 minutes here. What's the best way for folks to connect with you?
We're redoing timdavisonline.com right now, so that's probably going to be another week. But depending on when they listen to this, they probably can go to timdavisonline.com. Certainly, if they wanted to connect with me right now, a great way would be through Facebook. So if you go to facebook.com/themarketingevangelist, you'll get my page over there, and you can send a message to me through there, and I monitor those messages, and I get back with people. And then if you're just really like, hey, I got to get in touch with him, just send me an email to timdavis@timdavisonline.com.
Okay. Cool. That's awesome. Awesome, awesome, man. Well, like I said, we just got a couple more minutes, and I knew this would fly by, man, because you, I know you do the, the branding. In fact, you've got something coming up, right? A new project. Am I correct? A new seminar, or have you revamped the one you've been doing?
So I have a role here in Nashville with a mortgage lender, and my role is kind of a business coach and a consultant full-time with them, and in addition to all my other stuff. But we're getting ready to roll out Agent Marketing Academy. And it's just a series of seminars that we do. We cover branding topics. We do our personal branding mastery seminar as part of that. And one of our latest projects is called the Prospecting Formula, and how to really overcome the fear and anxiety of prospecting in that 14-pound gorilla called the telephone and actually get to what we need to do, which is make contacts and grow business. And so the prospecting formula is a way to reset your mind to where prospecting is not a negative, but it's actually a positive and something you look forward to every day, and then teach you the formula on how to go about that and make it effective.
Wow. Yeah, because call reluctance is a big deal, right? I mean, it's just, but I'm just guessing, knowing you, that part of the retraining of the mind is retraining people to think about how they're building relationships and adding value to people, and not necessarily, prospecting per se, right? I mean, kind of changing the way you look at it.
Yeah, prospecting is for gold miners, right? here's a quick example of this, really quick. A mindset shift. People will think prospecting calls are sales calls, and that automatically puts a whole layer of stress on their life, like I've got to win this deal, I've got to make something happen. And I teach them to stop looking at them as sales calls and start looking at them as relationship calls. Hey, I'm calling to check in on you and uncover, what you think about this subject or what some opinions are. I gave a real estate agent the other day, was struggling with FSBOs, really wanted to call them FSBOs, but had this emotional fear that if he knocked on the door of a FSBO, that they would come with a bat and beat him in the front line. And I'm like, that's foolish, and that's foolish. And he said, I know, but I can't get past it. And I'm like, well, why don't we stop thinking about it as a call to get a listing and just knock on the door and say, hey, you're a real estate agent, and you just wanted to find out why they wanted to list their home for sale by owner and what some of their experiences have been, and don't even make it about trying to get the listing or a sale at all, and just gather some information. Totally changed his perspective, and he went out and made several calls last week doing just that.
Yeah. Because listening is huge, like you said. Man, when people feel listened to, they're not being, quote, sold. Somebody once said the other day, people hate being sold, but they love to buy things. Somehow they're being sold something, But if you're going out just asking questions and, uncovering information and really by doing that, letting them know you really care about them, and it's authentic, man, you just differentiate yourself, I think, from probably 80% of the sales folks out there. That's awesome.
The real estate agent with the most friends wins.
Yeah.
Awesome,
how big
man.
Your friends, Natalie, you said it earlier, 80% of your business comes from past clients. It's because you built up a lot of relationships and friends.
Yeah.
At the end of the day,
yeah,
that's
do.
What you did.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Most agents,
all right,
most
buddy.
Friends wins.
Hey, man, thank you
thank
so much.
Thank you so much
we
for coming on.
Time.
We're almost at the end. This is great. And they,
thanks,
anybody
buddy.
Can contact you. They said timdavisonline.com for the archive
yep.
listeners that listen in, right?
Yep.
Or facebook.com and the marketing evangelist.
The marketing evangelist, or just email me at timdavis@timdavisonline.com.
Okay,
thanks, man.
Perfect.
You rock.
Thank you so
thanks,
much.
Buddy.
Love y'all's show. Keep it up. Talk to you guys real
take
soon.
Care. All right, man.
Thank
bye.
You. To everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter @RealtyUniversal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com.